Brad and Brit, Brad and Brit, the perfect combination of brawn and wit. Politics, sports, and trending shit. Let's tune into Brad and Brit.
It is the Brad and Brit cast. And we're live in the Monday 1:30 Eastern hour. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us.
Everybody all weekend long, they're like, God, I hate this weekend. I hope the weekend's over soon so we can get back to some Brad and Brit. And here we are. See you lasted.
I know. The list looks like this. Let's get right to it. Ski Daddy.
Yes.
The record that's not a record. The MASH Super Bowl argument in a new form.
I love it. It never goes away.
16 years for Jack Teixeira for stealing really important secrets. How many for Don? Don skates, America waits.
Oh, that's a good one.
Trey Gowdy warns Don to STFU.
Cute.
National media suddenly discovers there's a governor's race in North Carolina. Welcome aboard.
Yeah.
And on abortion rights, France takes not even a chance.
Oh, boy. Well, we might as well go with the story that was breaking, not at this moment, but earlier this morning, about how the Supreme Court has once again done Don's bidding for him.
Well, this was not unexpected. And
no.
I think it's a, I'm hoping it's the setup that we all want. And that relates to Trey Gowdy telling Trump to shut the fuck up over this, which of course he can't. Okay. No. You would think that, Donald Trump was personally responsible for curing cancer today and wanted the world to know it. So he's out bragging about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yes, you weren't kicked off of the ballot in Colorado for all of the reasons that we know you should have been kicked off the ballot in Colorado. So what is he to hit? Let's see, his first interview on this today was with Howie Carr, a right-wing super hack radio geek, and Boston Herald columnist. Trump said he was honored by the unanimous Supreme Court decision allowing him to remain on the Colorado primary ballot.
Honored. This is a great time for you to do your examination of etymology and as far as words and stuff. Honored.
I can behave like the president. See?
I'm honored that they broke the rules for me again.
Wait, you haven't gotten to the good quote yet. Here it is. Sorry.
My bad.
This is for future presidents. This is not for me. Wow. This is for future presidents, all presidents. That's right. If there's ever been a president more concerned about the future of the country beyond his term or terms, it's certainly Donald Trump, because it's never about him. It's about us. It's about posterity. Here's how I put it. The right of future would-be dictators, as he is, to not be subject to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment remains intact. Future seditionists like Trump will be allowed, like him, to have voters decide whether they wish to support a thug who attempts to overturn the result of a presidential election they lost, to try to alter vote counts, to encourage bogus slates of competing electors, to pressure their vice president to violate the Constitution, and then threaten their life with being hanged, and calling for their supporters to march on the Capitol, to trash the place, and look for lawmakers to murder or take hostage. That sacred right has not been trampled on by one of the states in this country. You want your state's rights? Not that one. Not that one. You don't have that one. Thank you.
Yeah, whether it was predicted or whether it was expected or not, it's once again another reason for this country to lose some faith and some hope in the Supreme Court, one of its bedrock institutions,
But Brent, it
I'm not feeling so great about
decision.
Things to come.
It was a 9-0 decision. Don't you have faith? It was unanimous, Britt. Come on.
Yeah, so great. So great. So does this mean that any challenges to keeping off the ballot in any state, that's just over now?
Yeah. You can't.
It's over.
That's over. So you know what, Britt? I think it's for the voters to decide, don't you?
Well, it is. I mean, it always has been. I just thought the actual amendments to the Constitution meant something, but
No. Britt, the Second Amendment means something.
It means you can be shot anywhere at any time.
The rest of them, not so much. Not so much.
Now, I want to put Mr. Gowdy on hold for just a moment, and I do want to glide on over to the North Carolina governor's race, because part of Donald Trump's appearance here in Greensboro on Saturday was that Mark Robinson, our lieutenant governor, who's running for governor, was in the crowd, and he got, well, the election's not until tomorrow here in North Carolina for the primary. Mark Robinson is undoubtedly going to get that nomination to be the Republican gubernatorial nominee. But some people nationally may have been a little surprised to see that Mark Robinson was being called Martin Luther King Jr. on steroids and MLK times two. These were things that Donald Trump was calling Mark Robinson Saturday at the Greensboro Coliseum, in which there was a legitimate medical emergency and the Guilford County EMS had to pump on somebody's chest. I believe really? They made it because they're, yeah. You were busy doing other stuff. When I went over to C-SPAN.
Yeah, I saw the last 10 minutes. I didn't see but I saw lots of clips and lots of highlights.
When I went over to it on my phone on C-SPAN, there's a lot of mumbling and stuff, and you can't hear. And I'm like, what, do they not have his microphone working? And dipshit McGee is over there on the side looking down at them, pumping on the dude's chest, because, you know, that's helpful. And then he finally gets back to his speech and gets into it and finishes up. But yeah, they had a legitimate medical emergency. There is someone who may have received a 911 call at about 3:30 in the morning from a woman who was lined up at 3:30 for an event that began at 2:00 in the afternoon.
Really?
And the woman may or may not have been scared about the quote unquote men who were milling around the Greensboro Coliseum. I feel pretty confident those men are of a certain race that would have been threatening to that woman. And the call taker had to describe to the woman how people are working. The Cat Williams loadout was happening. The Dan and Shay load in was happening. There were perhaps secret services that were doing sweeps. And she was the one that was the weirdo for lining up at 3:30 in the morning for a 2:00 event, thinking she would meet her hero.
I'm sorry, but it's not up to first responder types like you to be judgmental of citizens who call in distress, and blaming the victim is not a good move, sir. I have to take her side.
We decided that there was not a police presence that was needed for her at that particular time based on the resources that we have. So yes, Mark Robinson, a lot of people nationally don't know about this guy. They just don't know how bad he is. And he's very bad. Very bad. Well,
they're learning fast because it's getting lots
good
of coverage. Now, the kind of coverage beyond what so far has been, I'm sure, the pumping up of Mark Robinson on Fox News. He's probably been on there 8,000 times already.
He has.
And every bit of the truth about him is glossed over, right? Because he's MAGA on steroids. He isn't Martin Luther King on steroids. And by the way, I thought Martin Luther King was a communist. And that would mean that Mark Robinson is a double communist, right? Like Martin Luther King, which is, I can't. But the long piece in the Washington Post today is titled "Offensive Comments by North Carolina Republicans Stand Out Even in Trump's Party." And they don't miss a thing that he has said that really, of course, in a normal world would be disqualifying, but the cruelty is the point. Trumpism has infected this guy, and he's a black guy who's a bigot. Double. He's better than ever. Wow. That's fantastic. That's great. Supporters shrug off the reporting on Robinson's most outrageous comments as smear jobs and fake news. In 2018, he came out hard against the movie Black Panther. He uses a Yiddish slur for black people. That'd be Schwarze, I believe.
I think you can skip all the black stuff and the transgender stuff and go straight for the Holocaust denying and the Hitler mitigation.
Well, this will undercut that immediately because he says he's never, Robinson, been anti-Semitic. Yeah. And his allies point to the fact that he went to Israel last fall and met with Jewish leaders as evidence he sought to address the concerns. Well, see, here's the problem. You don't have to go to Israel to talk to anybody about your anti-Semitism if you're not anti-Semitic and you're trying to run for office and trying to fool people into thinking if you sit down or have your picture taken with Bibi Netanyahu, that means you've got the blessings of all Jews all the time, everywhere, including those in North Carolina. I mean, it's so transparent. And, you know, this is a real interesting dynamic in that because you have a presidential year, right? And you have the king of the public bigots, Trump, and then you have the would-be North Carolina king of the bigots, Mark Robinson, running at the same time. Do they get the same number of votes? This is always a good test. I mean, you're good at ferreting this crap out. Trump get more votes than him because there are people that just would vote for Trump but won't vote for a black guy no matter what? Or is Robinson worse than Trump? Or is Trump worse than Robinson? Robinson will get more votes than him.
We'll hope they both lose.
You know?
There's no way Mark Robinson gets just by name recognition and popularity and all that stuff and being at the top of the ticket. I think it's going to be like 2016. I think, you know, when Roy Cooper, was that Roy Cooper being elected over Pat McCrory? Was the year and then Trump carried the state? Is that correct in 2016?
In 2016.
I think that's
boy.
Isn't
that terrible? Did Pat McCrory? I don't think Pat McCrory made it.
I thought that's what happened in 2016. Is that Donald Trump carried the state?
Isn't that and then terrible Roy, that we can't remember that?
I'm pretty sure it was Roy Cooper winning over Pat McCrory in a very close race, and Donald Trump, of course, winning the state of North Carolina. So that was a lot of. I think it's one of those situations. There's no way Mark Robinson gets more votes than Donald John Trump. Are you Googling it right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can be clear.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was close. It was a very close race.
It was close, and it took a little while. But Pat McCrory, take a deep breath, actually did the right thing. And then Pat McCrory didn't insist that he won for years and years and years and years afterwards, like an asshole. So it's like one of those things. But if this is the first time when you're hearing this or watching us and you've never heard Mark Robinson's name before and you're not from North Carolina, and then you start, please look at what he said. And if you're as appalled as, like, I don't know, a human should be, just send $5 or $10 to Josh Stein right now. Josh Stein is the Democratic nominee. He's going to be when the polls close tomorrow. Please just send him a couple of bucks, get a bumper sticker, do something, because Mark Robinson as governor would be worse than I can't even imagine. It's George Wallace, one of those deals, one of those situations.
In blackface. Listen to this one. You'll love this one. He chafed at assumptions that black people are automatically Democrats. Yeah. He railed against Barack Obama's unconventional presidential portrait. He called it a reflection of the nightmare of Marxist socialism and embraced false claims that Obama was not born in the United States. That's right. He's a birther.
Which is like,
he joked that DACA, which stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which is program for undocumented immigrants who arrive in the United States as children. He says the DACA actually stood for dumbass communist Americans.
Yeah.
You see,
it's difficult. It's really difficult to find any politician who has talked as poorly about black people as Mark Robinson has. And of course, if you don't know, he's black. He's like talked way worse about black folks than almost any white politician you can imagine. And it's the same racist kind of tropes about not knowing who their fathers are and shit like that. It's the same sort of stuff. He puts it out there. This guy, his rise to power is solely because he went to a city council meeting in Greensboro one time. This was after, I think, Parkland happened. And the mayor of Greensboro said, I don't think it's such a great idea for us to have a gun show at the Greensboro Coliseum complex, by the way. Same building, pretty much, where Donald Trump was at on Saturday. And Mark Robinson goes to the meeting, and during the public commentary time, he goes on like a 2 or 3 minute absolute screaming rant, which goes viral. And the people who jack off to guns loved it, made it have millions of views. And he rode that right into the lieutenant governor position, which is essentially a powerless position in North Carolina. It's largely a ceremonial position, but it is elected. It is statewide, and it gives you at least some cachet as far as having your name out there. And that's what he's done for a number of years.
It's perfect. You have no responsibility, and you can just use it to spread name recognition and then run for the real job.
It is
of governor, which unfortunately for Mark Robinson, he doesn't realize this. The Republicans have neutered that job in a large sense since Roy Cooper's been in there for two terms, because correct, that's the only way they could fight back against him. They've done this in other states more successfully in some other states. But they've done a pretty good job of taking the governor's position here and turning it not to ceremonial, but not what it was.
And this is interesting. I think you have to go back and do some research on this. I don't know the last time a lieutenant governor has become governor in this state. I think it's been a long time. I think it's been decades since that's actually happened. Yeah. Generally speaking, what has happened over the past several years is that the attorney general spot has been the on-deck circle for the governorship. And hopefully that's going to happen here. We have a gentleman, by the way, while you're giving $5 to Josh Stein, Josh Stein, you can give $5 to Jeff Jackson, who's running for attorney general and is somebody that North Carolina needs in that position desperately.
So if Mark Robinson versus Josh Stein is kind of a proxy election beneath Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, the difference being that neither Josh Stein nor Mark Robinson are too old for the office. They don't have to be attacked for that. They're both in their 50s. Josh Stein would be the first Jewish governor of North Carolina. Mark Robinson would be the first black governor of North Carolina. And Britt, I know, again, I defer to you. You've been here longer than I have. I'm sure that won't play any part of any kind of whispering campaign or bigotry below the surface or bigotry out front. That just won't happen. It can't happen, right?
Well, it's interesting also because there's a lot of anti-Semitism that's kind of been taken into fifth gear ever since the Palestinian conflict of the current epoch. What is going on right now? Some folks have their anti-Semitism really showing. So yeah, from my experience in this state, the anti-Semitism certainly is there, but it's not as prevalent or as public as the anti-African-Americanism. So I don't know how it will play out. People tend to be very secretive about that stuff. And yeah, it's a bigot's paradise, really, or a bigot's, it's a Sophie's choice for bigots. You know, if those are your two choices, some people may choose not to vote in that race. I don't know.
Yeah, couldn't we have a real American running for governor? What is this?
I'm not sure, but I know that it's going to be awful. This will be by far, in my lifetime, and I think in the history of North Carolina, I don't want to overstate this. This guy will be the worst governor we've ever had if he's elected. Mark Robinson will be by far the most dangerous guy. You can talk about anybody you want to. You can talk Greg Abbott in Texas. You can talk about all these various guys that have been dangerous and terrible and awful. And this guy really is very, very, very bad. That woman in Alabama, she was very bad. I think they're all ham and eggers compared to what Mark Robinson could be if he's actually given any power, any political power in this state.
Right. Well, you know, he would be, if he were elected, and I don't think he's going to get elected.
God, I hope you're right.
If he did get elected, he would be an example of someone really reading out of the Trump playbook, which is, I'm an asshole, and I'm going to tell you I'm an asshole. I've got 25 different ways of showing you I'm an asshole and a bigot and a hater, and we're going to take back our state. He hasn't used those words yet, but he probably will. Back our state. Something stupid like that. And I dare you to not elect me. I mean, that's the whole Trump. I dare you to not elect me, because I'm really speaking for you. I know you don't want to admit it, but this is how you really think, blah, blah, blah. And that's what you get.
Well, I'm with you. I hope this doesn't happen, but it's, you know, all the polls, for whatever that's worth right now, are showing as a neck and neck race between those two. I don't know if they mean anything at this point or not. The dream would be is if he gets the nomination, all of a sudden he starts shitting the bed in the polls and the Trump people start inching away from him. That would be the great thing that could happen. If they'll be like, who, Mark? I don't know that.
I don't think we've seen Trump do that, even when he's booked losers like Kerry Lake or Mastriano in Pennsylvania. Even when it looks like they're going to get slaughtered, he never backs away from his original endorsement, because that would be, again, an admission that maybe he picked the wrong horse in the primary race to back. And the last thing Trump is going to do, no matter what happens, is admit that picking Mark Robinson very early on, talked about him last year, officially endorsed him in Greensboro on Saturday. The last thing he's going to do is admit that it would have been better off in the general election in North Carolina to pick one of the other guys, that Bill Graham guy, Dale Falwell, who is about as exciting as paint. And I know you think he's great. He's nothing. Nobody knows who he is.
He's great, and I would never vote for him. But he's the least. It's the old least objectionable programming theory in television. He's the least objectionable candidate for the Republicans.
But that's not how they. That's not how they lose campaigns anymore, Britt. They don't do that anymore. They'd have a chance of winning if they did, but they don't. They put guys like Mark Robinson in there. They can't help it.
I have a soft spot toward Dale Falwell, because Dale Falwell is in charge of my pension. Okay. That's why I have a soft spot toward Dale Falwell. I would never vote for him. Also, when you and I don't know if you remember this, but when you and I were unemployed and having a little trouble getting our checks, we reached out to Mr. Falwell through representation at the state level, and he kind of helped us out. So that's nice. It doesn't get my vote, but he's not altogether an irredeemable piece of crap like Mark Robinson is.
So he was just doing his job in a ministerial fashion. He was just performing the job. and that's as lame as me being indebted for life to Chris Christie because I got $50 back for a ticket that my daughter picked up on the New Jersey Turnpike for blowing through
Brad Krantz got a courtesy flush from some unnamed bureaucrat up in New York, and he's always up in New Jersey.
Chris Christie was the governor, so
he gets complete credit for it. You may go now to Trey Gowdy urging the former president to STFU.
Yeah. So Trey Gowdy was of course, that congressman from South Carolina with one of the finest hairdos that we've ever seen in public life. It would look different every time. Sometimes it would be straight up spiky, like John Bowser Bowsman of Sha-na-na.
There's a good historic poll.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Some days it looks like he just got out of the shower. But anyway, he was a prosecutor, I think, before he was a congressman. And he left Congress. And he's been a Fox geek for several years now. I think they even have him on a weekend show. But the problem with Trey Gowdy is he's been unable to actually always suppress the worst instincts of working on Fox, which means you always lie on behalf of Trump, or you excuse or deflect things. And Trey Gowdy is saying to Trump right now, this day, shut the fuck up over the ruling that you got 9-0 to be back on the Colorado ballot and not be kicked off of other ballots for violating Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which you clearly did, that the Supreme Court just didn't want that can of worms to open. And even though there was some, I guess, a little bit of consternation inside the court, John Roberts herded the cats and got a 9-0 decision on this, which is what he always wants. And Trey Gowdy, in so many words, is saying, Don, the likelihood that you're going to get smacked down 9-0,
that's it,
on the big case,
that's right,
about whether you have immunity, lifetime immunity from everything you've ever done, it's pretty good. And if you think that because you got this one, you're going to get that one, you're probably the dumbest white man to walk the earth right now. So shut up, quit bragging on it, and just, I love this one, show a little, quote, humility, Don. Yes, that's a word you want to associate with Donald Trump, humility. Of course, it's not going to happen, but Trey Gowdy is 100% right. Because the setup here, of course, when he does get smacked down, most likely in a 9-0 or maybe an 8-1 or 7-2 ruling, is suddenly this court, which he is thanking so much today, will be, he'll dox every one of the justices, right? He'll put out all their home addresses, their phone numbers, their social security numbers.
Right.
Because they're not a legitimate court, okay, right? As so Trey Gowdy is, he's correct, and I'm sure he's not the only one that's been thinking this. He said it, and he said it on Fox, so it has a little bit more weight to it today.
It's always so weird to try to figure out, like, he, you know, Trump, you know, he's kind of focused when a decision like this comes out and he'll put out a message and stuff. But then he'll, for like no reason, go off on like Hillary Clinton for some reason, just because it got stuck in his butt or something. You know, it's like, you know what I'm talking about? It's just so random and so weird.
Well, Britt, I don't know if you've seen the mashup of some of Trump's greatest hits this weekend. His inability to speak, his mangling, his blowing of everything up, which will not be seen on Fox. I can guarantee you that.
No.
Which, in its own way, clinches the argument it should with normal people who might have the powers of discretion over which one of these candidates has more cognitive impairment. I don't even think it's close. But I've been paying closer attention to these Midas Touch guys, Ben Mizelos. I think he's a law professor at one of the universities in Southern California. They have a great podcast, and he writes beautifully. And he summed up all the speeches that Trump gave this weekend, all of them. I believe there were two. Were there a third, or there's one here and one up in Virginia? This is a summing up of the speeches. Woman sings national anthem, forgets the words. Man attempts to say pledge and forgets the words. Song by incarcerated incarcerated January 6th insurrectionist plays. Trump takes stage, praises insurrectionists, and calls them hostages. Trump calls Biden Obama. Trump says he calls people the wrong names in speeches on purpose. Trump says Jack Smith stinks. Trump says making sex gestures discussing Fonnie Willis and Nathan Wade is a cool thing to do. Ha, ha, ha. Trump can't pronounce so many words, can't complete full sentences, so he sighs and goes, Trump says Biden looks like hell. Trump whines about the 2020 election. Trump says he took classified documents because he says he can do whatever he wants under the Presidential Records Act. He can't. Trump says the GOP is 100% MAGA, and now they don't want moderates. No discussion of policy, of course, as always.
That's true.
He's not speaking in actual sentences. No actual sentences.
He actually told the truth on that one for one, some reason or other. Something through the haze slipped through there. It is 100% MAGA. They don't want moderate candidates.
Yeah. Yeah. And the polling that came out over the weekend, of course, was terrible on the surface, I guess, for Joe Biden. He's about 5 points behind nationally, and people think Trump's leadership is much better. He's much better on the economy and all this stuff that just is just crazy, crazy shit. So you have to tune out the noise here on these polls and at least comfort yourself by knowing that Barack Obama was behind Mitt Romney. He was way behind Mitt Romney going into 2012, right?
Mm-hmm.
Romney was killing. Then Romney made the 47% comment. and that showed that Mitt Romney was out of touch with real people. Well, obviously, there's not one comment that Trump can make that will, turn his campaign down into the toilet. He's already said 500 things that would have knocked a mere mortal man, not Superman, off the pedestal. So you can't count on that. But I think what you can count on, and Britt, we've got to go back to our blocking and tackling here, which is that the weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, of all this is apparent on Trump as he speaks around the country at these rallies. You can see he's more jittery. He's slower. He's trying to be more deliberate when he's staring at the teleprompter and the scary music is playing in the background, yet he's still stumbling and fumbling, which, by the way, will not compare at all if Joe Biden makes one mistake reading the State of the Union teleprompter on Thursday night. One error, right? And Joe Biden's too old. That's what's going to happen there. But I'm predicting that Joe Biden right now is being isolated in oxygen tanks and being pumped up so that he can come out there ready to box Muhammad Ali, right? He's going to come out there all pumped up. Britt, this is a game that we can play here early because the State of the Union is 3 days from now. What kind of stupid-ass stunts do you think are going to be played by the Republicans? Some of them not showing up, some of them wearing something weird, shouting out the equivalent of, "You lied!" or "You lie!"
I think this is something the Duke guys used to do back during the day. The Duke fans, as they would, as the North Carolina lineup was being read by the PA announcer, they would open up the newspaper and read. That'd be kind of cool if they did that. Like copies of the Washington Examiner and kind of did that. We talk a lot about how Republicans are really good at certain things, like being assholes and lying and stuff like that. In fact, I'll just veer off for just one moment. The Donnie Deutsch clip, I think he was on MSNBC and he was talking about how the Democrats need to just scare the shit out of people. Did you see that? That was like, I think that was another mediaite from a few days ago. And I thought to myself, I always think of Brad's voice in these cases. The Democrats are never as good as scaring the shit out of people as Republicans are every single time.
Well, but see, I love Donnie Deutsch, but he's forgetting you don't have to come up with your own scary voice guy. I assure you that in the back rooms of not just the Joe Biden campaign, but the PACs that support him, they've got teams of people going over every minute of Trump speaking. And what I would like to see, here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see them roadblock an hour of network television time once a week and just show the clips of Trump with nothing else. Get all the networks to show it in a full hour, the kind of thing that you couldn't tune away from or that you couldn't pretend that you didn't know was on. That's how you have to do that. You have to get it on several outlets at the same time and blast it out on social media and cut it up and TikTok it, however the youngsters do it. Because Trump is a scary guy. He's a scary guy for the world. He's not just a scary guy for the United States. The rest of the world is shitting in their pants right now. And proof, by the way, is our final story here on the list, which is on abortion rights. France takes not even a chance. In their parliament, they voted to enshrine the right to get an abortion in their constitution. I think the vote was like 700-70. Jesus. You know, it was overwhelming. And what do you think that was in response to? That was in response to the United States of America. We think we live in this bubble where our politics don't affect the rest of the world. How can anybody think that? Not just with that, which is kind of an affirmative legal way to make sure that if some right-wing demagogue shows up in France to get elected, you know, that crazy woman that keeps running every time was a Marine Le Pen.
She
always gets 20%, but the polling always shows she's in the 40s, and then she gets 20 and gets beaten by more moderate or liberal people in France. But this kind of protects them in that area from that happening. And then you got that whack job down in Argentina, who Donald Trump referred. Remember, Trump referred to Argentina as a person. Did you see that? You see that little boogie?
I may have missed that.
He goes, "You know, Argentina, great guy."
If Argentina was a person,
it's a guy.
It'd be a pretty hot lady, I think. If Argentina was a person,
yeah. Now there was a wrestler, Argentina Rocco.
Argentina Rocco, the legendary wrestler.
He was my father's favorite wrestler. Okay. That's how long ago that was. Okay. That guy's probably been gone for 50 years. But I remember my father.
I believe he would have been a contemporary of, let's say, Bruno Sammartino.
No, before.
A contemporary of like Haystacks Calhoun and the original Sheik and Dick the Bruiser.
I think it was John L. Sullivan, the boxer.
You didn't do the "Is it a record or is it not a record?" Which I'm pretty sure this is where you're going to attack Caitlin Clark, the greatest women's basketball player of all time.
I'm not attacking her. I'm not attacking her at all. She's obviously a great shooter. I mean, I don't know how close we are to having her go up against Steph Curry in a 3-point contest. Although the other day, was it yesterday? Steph Curry was like 0-for-9 in 3 points. They sat him down and lost by 50. To the Celtics.
Yeah, but yesterday. That was yesterday in the ABC like showcase game at 3:30.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that great? But here's my case. She now has more points than Pete Maravich of LSU did. Pete Maravich played in 1968, 1969, and 1970 for LSU, and he went professional after that, so he didn't play a fourth year. And he averaged 44 points a game.
Well, it's probably because he hit a bunch of three-pointers, right?
There were no three-point shots then, Britt.
Oh, man.
The three-point shot came into college basketball in 1986, 16 years.
It did, although after he left. Although some conferences had it before then, but yes, it was the 80s until it wasn't until the 80s till it came in.
It was the 80s. And someone pointed out, there wasn't a shot clock either. Well, right. Britt, what happened in the days before the shot clock? You could slow the game down and less stop scoring. Guys there, like that.
There was less scoring in basketball.
Of course. The shot clock. Of course. So Pete Maravich, let's go through this one more time. And Caitlin Clark averages 33 points a game. Pete Maravich, 43 points a game. He played in kind of the dead ball era of basketball, comparatively speaking. That's no true. Three-point shots. He played one fewer season, played obviously a lot fewer games to get to the same number.
You're mansplaining right now. You're mansplaining.
I'm not mansplaining. I'm sorry. It's just the facts. And so, yes, she's got the most points of all time, but just like Jim Brown doesn't have the most all-time yards, he has the greatest average per carry of 5.3 yards per carry and averaged 104 yards a game for his entire fucking career. Yeah. No one has touched that. Barry Sanders is a little bit behind, but then it's way back there. So is Jim Brown not the greatest running back of all time because he doesn't have the most all-time yards? Nobody would ever dare say that. But because of the politically correct world in which we live, in which you must be woke and acknowledge the greatness of the woman, he's suddenly the greatest scorer of all time. I say balderdash.
Thank you. The Trump, one of his rally cries on Saturday was he was going to keep men out of women's sports. That was one of the things that he wanted to make sure that the crowd knew that he was for.
And what is your point in saying that after what I just said?
Well, it's
what
just
does that have to do with anything.
Certainly no. you're playing into the hands of these people, even though what you're saying is 100% correct. But you're trying to, once again, the people who you are aligning yourself with would be the Barstool Sports, the Outkick the Coverage Clay Travis folks, who would then point out that it's cute, little girl, you did okay, but you're not as good as, you know, the great Pete Maravich, the Pistol.
No, she is great on her own merits. There shouldn't be a comparison just based on raw numbers, because raw numbers don't explain anything. They don't. They have to be put in the context of which they are achieved. By this, the same weekend that LeBron James hits 40,000 points. Now, did they spend all day rekindling Michael Jordan versus LeBron James again?
If they do,
based on just the number 40,000, it's a stupid argument, isn't it? Because there are other things about basketball players that mean more than just the raw number of points that are scored. There are a lot of people who still think that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who's right behind LeBron James now, doesn't get the due that he deserves. And he had that raw number that was number one for, what, about 35 or 40 years, scoring the most points of all time. What's that all about?
I don't know. Don't you feel that there are a certain number of people who are not huge basketball fans that kind of go, well, of course he's 7 feet, 4 inches tall. He's going to be good at basketball. Of course he is. He had an unfair advantage over people being that tall. I think he's 7'2". Ralph Sampson was 7'4". And then when you start pointing out to these people, well, there'd be some other tall people like Yao Ming, and they weren't quite as good as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But
there are a lot of tall guys in the NBA. None of them were as good as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Not one of them. You can't name one. And you know what's really sad when you see in your real life a really tall guy, and they're not a basketball. They're just tall and uncoordinated like the rest of us. They're not automatically good basketball players because they're tall.
I think I can say this. I think LeBron is better at this age than Michael Jordan was at this age.
Oh,
I think I can say that, but yeah. I still think Michael Jordan was better overall. But I mean, the whole thing is fairly silly. I mean, it's kind of like, was Joe Montana as good as Tom Brady? I'm not sure. Well, they were both like really great quarterbacks and did stuff at the time that nobody else had done. So why can't we just like say they were both great? No. One has to be better.
Well, in the case of Tom Brady and LeBron James, they have the almost unbeatable advantage of playing so much longer than anybody else at the top of their game. Correct. And there's an argument to be made there that kind of puts them in a different class.
It does.
It kind of does. But I just think that using the raw number is...
Yeah,
it's easy. It's lazy. It's
specious. I mean, it's fraught with problems. I also wonder, like, if that in JJ Redick terms, if Pete Maravich was playing basketball with plumbers and electricians, was that also, or had they actually graduated to actual basketball? That's what he said. He once said that about Bob Cousy. Well, Bob Cousy was playing with plumbers and electricians.
I saw Pete Maravich play at Madison Square Garden in the NIT in 1970.
Oh, that's all right.
And he scored, I should probably look this up. I think it was one of his 60-point games, just ridiculous. And many of those points that he scored were long-distance bombs that were, you know, if the floor had that paint on it, they would have been three-point shots. In other words, if he had three-point shots to take, first of all, he would have taken more than he probably did. But he was making them. He was making them anyway. You know who straddled the 3-point era on both? It was Larry Bird.
Yes.
Larry Bird played a couple years before the 3-point line.
Correct.
Then he played after, and he was a pretty decent 3-point shooter. But he didn't go out of his way to try to look for 3-point shots. It wasn't the thing that it is now. It was just kind of there. There were a couple of specialists back then.
I think the 3-point line was another innovation from the ABA, correct? Didn't the ABA have it? And then it was brought over eventually to the NBA?
No. It was stolen. It was stolen. It was stolen.
All right.
But anyway, she's pretty good. She's great.
Like, she's crazy.
She's a killer.
I'm almost disappointed that she's not going back for another year because she was so great for women's college. And I mean, I don't begrudge her for wanting to go to the NBA and make money. She was making pretty good money in NIL for Iowa. But she did something, I think, for women's college basketball that was just, it took it to another kind of thing. It was just a huge deal. And I'm just a little disappointed that she won't be coming back.
Well, but they're looking for her to be the Pele of women's professional basketball.
God bless them.
People to start paying attention.
I hope so.
I'm sure whatever team she's on next year will be on TV every week.
Oh yeah, they should be. I mean, I look forward to following her, and then I hope Bayou Barbie comes with her in LSU. I hope she's drafted. They have some sort of rivalry in the WNBA. That would be amazing.
Well, let's think this one out of the box. Right now, televised sports is in complete flux. Right. Contracts are coming up.
Yeah.
Leagues want more.
Yeah.
Networks don't want to pay more, but there's Alphabet, Google, there's Apple TV, there's Netflix.
Yeah.
There's all these other new players that have unlimited amounts of money. I think somebody's going to bid up the WNBA.
That's
possibly just because of her and make it as ubiquitous maybe as the NBA. I think someone's going to take a shot at that.
I think that's always, the WNBA has always kind of been a tag along with the NBA contract. Whoever got it kind of had to take the game.
This breaks it up, I think. This could break it up. They need this person.
No, I think
by the way, is the all-time college score. Did you know that? Best ever.